Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin on the Capital Ideas Podcast. Investment professionals reveal how they find their next great idea, what gives them their investment edge, and a few personal stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Capital Client Group, Inc.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
And on the topic of food, if you have any nutritional questions, fling them into us, because Sarah Kyo, who is founder of Eat Well and expert dietitian, is with us to talk all things diet, nutrition, and particularly back to school, because keeping the kids fed is at the forefront of a lot of people's thinking this week and next week. So 53106 at a cost of 30 cents of your questions, or 087-1400-106. Have you any views on carbon hour in a can? Do you feel passionate?
I really am keen to try it, because I saw the ad the other day and I thought, you know what, if that's nice, it could be handy.
Yeah, there's a place for super noodles and carbon hour in a can.
No, there is. Hoops. There is.
There is. You know. Not every day, but they're not a bad thing. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, whatever about feeding the kids, and we will get to that, what about protecting the other kids? If because one of the things that parents have been getting over the last week has been notes from school saying, look, nut allergies are a bigger thing. Please don't bring in peanut spreads. Don't bring in Nutella, all the rest of it. Is the prevalence of those kind of allergies increasing significantly?
So it is increasing, for sure. But it's been fairly steady at around 4% of children have a food allergy of some description. And most of them grow out of it. And so usually by the time they're about 8 to 10, 80 to 90% of those food allergies are gone. So it's very much a childhood thing. So a lot of kids will grow out of it. Egg is the most common food allergy out of all of them.
Cooked or raw, does it matter?
At that stage, it doesn't matter. Later, generally what we can do is we'll talk about what's called a food ladder, where you'll bring them different stages of very well cooked eggs all the way up to sort of lightly cooked and mixed into different things and things like that. Not to be tried at home on your own. Definitely under supervision with your doctor and your dietitian. But yeah, I mean, it is that thing if you have a child in a class who has a peanut allergy, just for safety, just to say to parents, don't bring it in. Because one of the things with peanut allergies is they can be aerosoled in that sort of sense. And if it's just in the air for some kids, it's too dangerous. And obviously, I work with the Celiac Society, so we have all the kids who are coming in and we're like, we're not banning wheat. We don't need to for celiac, for anybody panics. But you are saying, particularly to kids going to school, like, don't swap lunches with the other person and so on. And kids do swap lunches. And if you have something like a child who's going to have an anaphylactic attack, if they have your peanut butter sandwich from your child, it's just, you know, not what we want.
Is there any way to ward off any of those allergies? Is there a best practice where you either introduce or don't introduce the food when the kid is
that
very small?
That is the golden question. The general thinking is the earlier you get a child to eat a food allergy, the less likely they are, or a food allergen, the less likely they are to go on to develop an allergy to it. So it's a bit of a complicated thing, but actually you often see food allergies linked with eczema. And people would think, oh, the food allergy is causing the eczema. But actually, it's the other way around. Eczema is what causes the food allergy. And what happens is that with eczema, barriers in the skin are broken. And sometimes the food protein gets in through the child's skin before they've eaten it. And if that happens, it's the first time the body has encountered it, but it encounters it as danger and an enemy. So then when the child later eats it, it gets this allergic reaction to it. So that's why, particularly with kids with eczema, we really encourage them to get actually foods earlier. And, you know, a lot of people wait to wean their babies at about 6 months. All of my dietitian's friends, we all wean straight away at 4 months, because it's like, get the allergens in, get them in early. Now, there's some you're going to delay and all the rest, but the earlier you get the fish and all the different things into kids, the less likely. It doesn't entirely remove it, but less likely. But if there is a history of severe allergy in your family, you definitely talk to your doctor when it comes to weaning and all that sort of thing first.
When you talk weaning, what about breast milk? Does that have any role? Does anything
possibly not huge? Doesn't seem to be making a massive difference. What we do know is that if there's history of eczema in a family or history of food allergy in a family, if they never have exposure to cow's milk protein when they're born, so no top up, no nothing, and it's just breast milk, possibly that reduces some allergies with that. But there's definitely a lot more research needed there.
Now, when we talk allergies, the one that is most commonly referred to is the peanut one.
Yeah.
What are the other ones?
Oh God, there's loads. You can be literally allergic to anything. So I know we were just talking earlier about kiwi allergy, and that's actually, it's one of the major allergens
Kiwi.
Kiwi. So there's about, I don't get this entirely correct, there's about 10 different components of kiwi that can actually cause allergy. And then if you're allergic to kiwi, it runs a little bit with latex allergy. So they're similar components. So you might also be allergic to bananas and latex as well. So yeah, that's a one you're going to hear a little bit more of. Is more think about allergens. You don't get them unless you actually eat the food. So as kiwis become more popular, more people eat them. So you're more likely to find somebody with. So you get fewer rice allergies in Ireland, but you get a lot more of them in Japan, things like that. So exposure is a big part of it as well.
So the kiwi allergy wasn't a big issue in the 1950s.
We didn't see a whole lot of it 50 years ago for sure. Yeah.
Dragon fruit allergy, likewise. We don't have a whole lot of it.
An avocado allergy, all of that. You know?
Do they have the same kind of aggressive, potentially anaphylactic reaction, or is that unique to nuts? They can they?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing about a food allergy is you can have someone who, when they eat eggs, gets a rash that's uncomfortable, and someone else who is allergic to eggs and eats and gets anaphylaxis. So it's very individual in the body. Now, different components of the food can decide how severe that reaction is, but it's not up to us. It's, you know, you just say, look, that happens. So you can absolutely get anaphylaxis or not with a milk allergy, anaphylaxis or not with egg allergy, and so on.
Outside of allergies, then, when you are looking at feeding the kids and sending them to school, it is difficult for parents because there is a great simplicity to the ham sandwich.
Oh, there really is. It's so quick and handy. Yeah.
But I assume, as a dietitian, you would suggest feeding them the same thing for lunch every day, day in, day out, might be an error.
No, absolutely fine. So let me just put the whole school lunch thing to bed because this melts my brain every year. It is perfectly okay if your child goes to school with the same lunch every day. Yes, yes. So in an ideal world, yes, variety is wonderful. Yes, if we can all eat lots of different foods all day long. But there are kids. Do you know what I think? I think we forget how much we throw at kids when they go to school. Like, you have little kids going in, their new school uniforms, scratchy clothes, you know, they've all these different things going on. And then they've got to tackle this brand new lunch. They don't even know what half of it is. Look, if what they're eating, if they go to school with the same lunch every single day for the year, it's fine. Kids only eat 20% of their food at school for the entire day. Like, the obsession we have with the school lunch, 80% of it is still breakfast, after school snack and dinner in the evening. Yes, school lunch is important. Yes, it's a great opportunity to get a bit of fruit into them or a bit of calcium into them and a bit of protein. The one drawback with ham is we know the processed red meats, if you're eating a lot of them, are linked to an increased risk of bowel cancer. We really want to try and limit them. So if they would slice up a bit of chicken, you know, something else instead, but have a chat with the kids with it. And I'd also say to parents, stop giving them huge school lunches. Like, the whole thing parents say to me, they come home with the lunch every single day. Well, most of them need half the amount of food you're giving them. They only get about 10 minutes to eat lunch. Like, and they're too busy talking. So most of the time they're not going to eat half of it anyway. And the last thing I'd say, particularly if your child hasn't started back to school yet, but they probably all have, will you please make sure your small children can open their lunchbox, peel their orange and get their water out of their water bottle? Because one teacher with 30 kids in the class...
That keeps the teacher entertained.
Oh, no. My heart goes out to teachers with children with cling film on sandwiches, like, you know.
Now, on the topic of them coming home with half-filled lunches, you know that thing about firefighters rescuing cats in a tree and it being unnecessary because nobody's ever seen a cat skeleton in a tree? In the same way, kids come home with lunches and you get teachers, I think, feeling a certain moral pressure to try to convince them to eat their lunch.
Yes, yes.
No child has ever starved to death because of not eating their school lunch. Yeah. Should you be pressuring them to eat it, or if they don't want it, leave?
I'd give a bit of encouragement, because what happens with some kids, it's not that they don't want it or they're not hungry, it's they are too busy talking or they're distracted. So I think, yes, and let's face it, as a teacher, do you really want to spend the afternoon with 30 hungry kids in the afternoon who are not going to pay attention? So, you know, the food is important during the day. So look, I've no hassle with teachers kind of giving that bit of encouragement. I don't think we should have the standing over forcing kids to finish every mouthful, but sure, I don't think anyone has time to do that anyway. But that's, I say, parents get really, really upset about this, and I see so much and on Instagram, and you have these beautiful lunches and everything is star shaped and cut out and eyes in it, and I just think, what a horrible mother I am, because my kids never got that. You know, you don't need to do this. The kid just needs to be comfortable with what turns up in the lunchbox.
How good are children at deciding what they should eat for themselves? I remember reading a study, one of those 1950s couldn't do it today studies, where kids were allowed, they were just put in front of a whole pile of food. And though they took interesting journeys to how to get there, they all ended up choosing balanced diets, more or less organic.
More or less. I mean, if it's, you know, if you leave kids to it to a certain extent, but it depends on also what you're offering them. Because if they've been taught to really like treat foods, and the human body, we're designed to actually like sweet things. That's really built in. We're also designed to like a combination of carbohydrate with fat. So chips, crisps, very high fat foods based on carbs are very attractive to our whole sensory system because, you know, if you think about it, they're very high calorie foods and we wouldn't have had always access to high calorie foods. But kids are curious, they'll try lots of things, and a lot of it is taking the pressure out of it. Very often when I do work with fussy eating, one of the big things we're doing is saying to parents, no rows about food. And that's actually the hardest part. Literally no rise. As soon as you start fighting with a child about food, they get stressed and their hunger sensations just switch off. So you're now finished. and there's no amount of fighting. And if you just take the stress, the judgment, all of that out of it and just leave kids, you'll generally, now not always, and some people do need sort of specialist sort of support with it, but the stress has to come out of it straight away.
You mentioned the dopamine wonder that is the carbs and fat combo. How do you handle the sort of the social norms of kids getting rewarded by all and sundry with cakes and with sweets, whether it is neighbours, friends, teachers? There is a sort of a sense of, well, you know, it's always somebody's birthday. You're always doing something that requires you to get a Dairy Milk.
It is. And it's a growing thing where literally everywhere kids go, someone's given them a sweet or a cake or a bar of chocolate. And I actually think it's kind of our generation, because when we were kids, you got like treats on a Sunday and that was it. And if you got anything special in between, it was so exciting. And I think our generation still think the kids are excited about that, but the kids are actually bored to tears with the stuff and they really don't want it. And I think it is hard because you end up, like, I know even with my own kids, like they'd finish up something at Christmas and then there was selection boxes handed out to everybody and then they'd finish something, some other sport, and there'd be something else handed out. And like in 2 weeks, they had about 16 bars of chocolate. And you're like, I've no problem with them having a treat, but can we, you know, is there something else we can do? They don't actually need it. Don't appreciate it either.
Text asking, is there anything that anywhere I can find more information about a peach allergy in a child?
To be honest, what I would say to you there is get a referral into an allergy dietitian with that. Because if you have a child with a peach allergy, and I know you probably have been banging the drum on that, but go back. There's dietitians who specialise in that and they'll have a look. There's a very good website called ifan.ie. So it's the Irish Food Allergy Network. And there's a fantastic allergy dietitian called Ruth Charles who set that up. Unfortunately, she's not doing clinics anymore. And I wish she would, because she is just such a genius for food allergies. But that website has lots and lots of information on it. But if you do have a child with that, get them to send you to see the dietitian.
I know this, I don't mean this to sound uncharitable, but what happened to people with food allergies before we understood
food
allergies?
They died.
Literally?
Yeah.
So it was that common, it was just terminal.
You would have just been very young. So most food allergies turn up in sort of 4 to 9 months of age. So you just didn't see them.
And would it have been understood as a cause of death, or would the parent just think something happened and I don't know what it was?
You just wouldn't know. I mean, far back do you want to go? Child just suddenly ups and dies and you might not know. And then, you know, you start looking at tracking with it. And then obviously treatments as well. Because even if you actually know what a food allergy is, where do you get to the point where someone now says, well, you need to have an EpiPen with an adrenaline injection ready to go? So that's where a lot of it. And remember, there's a genetic component to it as well. If you do have food allergy in a family, it's more likely to be passed down. So one of the reasons we think we're seeing a little more food allergy, one of the reasons is people are growing up to pass on the genes for the food allergies with it as well.
So
now, that's
the
a
mortality
theory.
But it is a working theory that suggests that because one generation survived, that gene is now passing through. That's amazing. A text asking, is there any, because you were talking about eczema earlier on, is there any vitamin or supplement that can help with eczema?
So eczema is largely genetic. It's very much around North Europeans. So we get a lot more of it than other parts of the world. Not unique, certainly, to it, but it's more common, the particular genetic issue with the skin with it. In terms of food and supplements, not really. There's some evidence that even primrose oil taken as a supplement can help. So some severe types of eczema is due to the body not being able to make a thing called gamma linolenic acid, which you get in primrose oil.
What?
GLA, which you get in...
I'll say it again, it was very impressive.
Gamma linolenic acid. So you get it in even primrose oil. That's why it's quite good for skin generally. Can be helpful, but with eczema, the actual really big important thing to do is to put on the skin creams. And if you're prescribed steroid cream for your child, to use it. Parents really don't want to. I go to a lot of conferences on this and the skin doctors, like, if they would just... But people are nervous about steroids with the kids. Putting it on as a cream is different to taking it as a medication. And it works really well, but it also... If you can keep the barrier in the skin very strong, they're less likely to get the food allergies. So that's why we really want them to treat. You treat it with the creams and that. Some children, definitely food allergies can aggravate it. But again, go to your dietitian. Now, don't be doing these food sensitivity IgG tests and all the rest. Go in and see a dietitian and get properly checked.
One quick one going back to what we were talking about in relation. And by the way, hello, Bobby. We'll talk to Bobby in a tech. He's just crept in. You were talking about kids' food. Picky eaters. If a kid refuses to eat something, you said don't get in a fight, what do? Do you just seed the ground?
Oh God, well, fussy eating is just this huge thing. You will get the section of kids who are just holding out for their favourite food, and in that case, let them go hungry. Then you have the kids who are very sensory, and it's a huge sensory issue. And those are the kids who would quite literally starve to death rather than eat. And they're the kids you need to go and see your dietitian, you need to go and get your help with. Because there's this thing, I'll just let them go hungry. There are kids who will just starve with it. And you do
really?
And you do see those nutritional... They're a little more common in autistic kids because they have that, their sensory systems are just all the way up to 11. So the feel of food in mouth can just be so uncomfortable that they don't eat. So you can do a lot of work. There's a lot you can do. And this is the thing, if you get into, particularly a dietitian who knows what they're doing, occupational therapist can be brilliant. Some kids, the reason they're fussy eaters is the muscles in their mouth and tongue aren't developed properly. And that's where speech and language therapist will come in and do work on that. Like, there's so many causes of it. You know, as I said, if I sit down with the family, usually I can see what kind, where we're going with it, and then I'd refer on maybe to something else. And you can tell the kids who just need to be let go hungry a little bit and the kids who actually that's not going to work for. So it is very broad.
Suggestions here in relation to picky eaters. My two grandsons told me while eating the dinner that I cooked that they didn't like carrots. So I explained that they weren't carrots. They were orange sweet corn and they ate them and loved them. Where do you stand on lying?
Totally. Perceptions is huge. And the best one I ever saw was one fussy eating kind of couple of kids I was working with, and one of the things we were trying to get the kids to eat was bread, and the dad went home and he made bread and he put blue food dye in it, and they went out and ate the blue bread. So sometimes I do random things, like you'll give them shepherd's pie and ice cream cones and they'll eat it, you know, just literally shifting them out of their thinking on it. But the same for anybody, for anything, but it's just kicking them out of their zone or getting them curious about the food and getting
because
kids cooking.
If they
is
have
big
got
part
themselves into a rut that says, yeah, I don't eat X, if they don't interpret it as X, they come at it afresh.
It comes at it with a different thing. And that's where cooking actually is brilliant, because with cooking, even if a kid doesn't eat it, they end up smelling it, touching it. It's a whole sensory thing with eating, and it's the touch and the feel and the smell. You know, and they end up eating a whole lot more if they've had their hands in it and cooked it.
Sarah, as ever, fascinating. Thank you very much. That is Sarah Keogh. And if you want to find her, you can get her on Eat Well. She is the founder of Same.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin on the Capital Ideas Podcast. Investment professionals reveal how they find their next great idea, what gives them their investment edge, and a few personal stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Capital Client Group, Inc.